So we think about God's grace. It truly is amazing, isn't it? There's many songs that we could have sung this morning about God's grace. Perhaps the most well-known one is Amazing Grace. Most everybody knows Amazing Grace. And God's grace is amazing. It's incredible. It's marvelous. And what is grace? God's grace is commonly defined as God's unmerited favor. God's favor that's bestowed upon us. It's not deserved by anything that we've done. What in fact do we deserve? We deserve punishment, don't we? Because as we were born into this world as sinners, and as we continually rebelled against God, what we deserved was punishment. But God, in His grace, provided a way for us to be right with God. That is God's unmerited favor toward us. And God's grace is so abundant and rich. It's by God's grace that we've been saved. It's not by any works that we've done. It's only by God's favor upon us in Jesus Christ. That's how we've been delivered from the penalty of sin and from the power of sin. One day we'll forever be delivered from the very presence of sin. As we think about God's grace, we naturally think about our salvation. And I hope that today each and every one of us can say, yes, I have been saved by God's good grace. I've been saved because I put my faith in Jesus Christ and what He's done for me. I hope all of us can say that. If one of you can't say that this morning, I'd love to talk with you and share with you from God's word how you can know beyond a doubt that you are one of God's children, that you are right with Him. But as we think about God's grace, usually we think about our salvation first and foremost. We've been saved by God's grace, by His good favor, a favor that we didn't deserve in the slightest. And while it's right for us to think about salvation and saved by grace, it's not just our salvation at that one moment in time, whenever we trusted in Jesus as Savior. That's not the only time God's grace was manifested in our lives. God's grace was manifested in the time before that and the time after that. Even right now, we need to realize that our lives are richly blessed by God's grace, by God's favor on our behalf. You know, we could spend the rest of the morning giving testimony of how God has been gracious to us. How has God bestowed His favor upon us? And if each one of us would give a testimony, the hour would be over, wouldn't it? We could spend all day, really. We could spend a whole week or a month testifying of God's grace in our lives. Well, this morning we want to be encouraged by a testimony of God's grace. It's not a testimony that any of us will give, although many of us could. But we want to find a testimony from the Scriptures concerning God's wonderful grace. And we find this testimony in the book of Acts chapter 27. If you're using one of our pew Bibles, it's page 1290. The Acts chapter 27, we find a wonderful testimony of God's grace. We'll be encouraged by the Apostle Paul and his life. And it's not just Paul's life in this context that is blessed by God's grace, but it's the lives of many others as well. This grace showed itself to Paul and his fellow travelers as they were experiencing smooth sailing. And a lot of times whenever we talk about smooth sailing, we're using that phrase figuratively, right? Whenever I say, well, how did your day go? Or we ask that, well, how did your day go? We can say, well, it's been a day of smooth sailing. We don't literally mean that we've been on the boat and we've experienced smooth waters. But in the case of Paul, literally, God's grace bestowed itself on him in those times of smooth sailing on water. Well, God's grace didn't just show itself in those times of smooth sailing, but also in the times of storms. And once again, it's a literal storm. And then God's grace showed itself in Paul's life and in the lives of others by way of a shipwreck and during that time of shipwreck. Acts chapter 27 is what we could call an adventure story. And how many of us don't enjoy adventure stories? I think all of us love to read a good adventure story or to hear somebody tell us an adventure story or to watch an adventure story on TV. Well, this is an adventure story, Acts chapter 27. Paul is on his way to Rome, and he's going to testify before the Caesar, before the Roman Emperor Nero. And he's not traveling as a free man. Rather, he's under the custody of the Roman military. And this adventure that we find in Acts chapter 27, it begins by Paul going on a sea journey, and the journey begins with smooth sailing. It seems as if everything is going according to plan. Everything is going normally. But even during the normal circumstances of our life, whenever everything seems to be going smoothly, we don't want to forget God's grace that is abundant in our lives and in the lives of others. So as we come to Acts chapter 27, I want you to look at verses 1 and 2, and we read this. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, They delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band, and entering into the ship of Adramyttium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. Just a little bit of the back history here. For 2 years, Paul had been a prisoner under Roman authority. First of all, it was under the authority of the Roman governor Felix. And then after that, it was the Roman governor Festus. Paul was kept in custody by the Roman military. The Jews had falsely accused him. Paul had defended himself, but yet these governors still kept him in custody. He was, in essence, in prison. And so Paul was examined more than once. And it was while he was examined under the authority of Governor Festus that Paul appealed to Caesar. That was Paul's right as a Roman citizen to appeal to Caesar and to go and have his case presented before the highest bar of authority on an earthly scale. And that appeal was granted, and so Paul was now waiting for the transportation to be arranged for him to go from Caesarea to Rome. And in verse 1, we read that the time had arrived for Paul's departure. He would go to Rome by sea, along with other prisoners. He was entrusted to a man named Julius, a Roman centurion. He's connected with Augustus' band, or the cohort of Augustus. And this is an imperial military unit. Now, if Paul and his fellow travelers were to travel by sea, that means they need to find a ship to travel on. And in those days, there were not passenger ships. There weren't ships just devoted merely for the transferring of people from one place to another. Oftentimes, for citizens, for normal people, and even for people like the Roman centurion, you'd have to pay your way to be transported by a commercial ship, a ship that has cargo on it. And this is the case in Caesarea, no doubt. And here's a map. Our geography may not be the most fresh in our minds. And so here you see the red arrow. This is Caesarea. Paul, the apostle, was kept as prisoner in Caesarea for 2 years. And now he's going to be leaving Caesarea to go to Rome, which is quite a distance away. And so here is Paul. He's going to be getting onto a ship. And he's going to be traveling, ultimately, to Rome. So here they are in Caesarea, where the red arrow is. The ship that they are able to enter, to embark on, is from this town called Adramyttium. That's not how you pronounce it. My tongue is giving me a little bit of difficulty here. But you see the blue arrow, the town that this ship is headed toward, and where it's from is this town marked with the blue arrow. And so this is where they're at. They're at Caesarea, they're embarking on the ship, and the ship ultimately is going to be heading back to where the red arrow is, or the blue arrow rather, and of course they're going to take more than one ship as they travel to Italy and Rome ultimately. And so here's the ship, they embark on it. It's probably in Caesarea for a trading mission, and now it's going to its home port. And the return trip would be by way of Asia. And maybe it's going to be continuing to have trade as it goes on this way. But probably the reason why they go up by way of Asia is because of the winds and the currents of the sea. Here is Paul, a prisoner of Rome. But even as a prisoner, he's experiencing God's grace in his life. And how does that grace manifest itself in his life? Well, one of the ways that we see God's grace in Paul's life, we see here that there are two of his friends that are allowed to go with him. One of them we read about in verse 2. A man named Aristarchus. He's a man from Macedonia, from the city of Thessalonica. Here is one of Paul's friends, a co-worker, someone who could encourage him. Paul didn't have to make this voyage on his own. He had a close friend with him. Not only was Aristarchus with him, but also Luke, the one who was the author of this letter, he is with him as well. He's not named specifically, but we do read the pronoun, we. We launched. So here is Luke, the author of the letter, along with Paul and Aristarchus, traveling ultimately to Rome. That's God's grace, isn't it? Paul's a prisoner, but he's not traveling alone with no acquaintances. He has two friends with him. That's God's grace in Paul's life. Well, how else is God's grace manifested in Paul's life? We come to verse 3. And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. The first stop is Sidon. So as we look at the map here, We see the next red arrow, Sidon. It's up north on the coast, and that's their first stop. And what happens here in Sidon? Well, the ship probably is going to be either loading or unloading cargo, and that takes some time. And so the centurion, the one who is overseeing Paul, allows Paul to go into the city and have fellowship with fellow believers, with some of Paul's friends. That's a blessing, isn't it? Paul didn't have to stay cooped up in that ship while they were unloading or loading cargo. He was able to go into town, have fellowship with his friends. Now, what did they do there in Sidon for that period of time? They probably shared a meal together. They probably prayed together. They probably had a time of encouragement. That's a blessing. You know, Paul could have been under the authority of a centurion who was angry and who was not willing to let Paul get off the ship. But that wasn't the case with Paul. Here was Julius, a Roman centurion that treated Paul in a sense as a brother, willing to let him go. Now, probably there was a soldier that went with Paul. They wouldn't just let him go on his own, but he allowed Paul to go from the ship to Sidon to have sweet Christian fellowship. That's a blessing of God's grace. So already we've seen two manifestations of God's grace in Paul's life, and the journey has just begun. The journey so far has been on smooth waters. Well, we continue on in verses 4 through 6. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. So they're currently in Sidon. Where are they going to go next? Well, our next port where they stayed is this city of Myra, or the port of Myra. That's where they stopped at next. It was very common in those days for ships coming from Alexandria, Egypt, to come north and dock in Myra. And these ships would be loaded with wheat. And their destination would not just be Myra, but it would be Rome. Now, the reason why they did this is because of the winds and the currents. It was easier for them to come from Alexandria, which is due south of Myra, to come north to Myra and then west and further north to Rome. It's not the shortest route, but that is the best route with the currents and the winds. And it's there in Myra that the centurion finds a ship going to Rome. The ship on which they had first embarked was going back to Adriptium. So they didn't want to stay on that ship, but they did get on this other ship, a larger ship with the cargo of wheat, and they now are going to be on their way to Italy. That's the plan anyway, to Rome. Well, the account continues in verses 7 and 8. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete, over against Salmon, and hardly passing it, came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lycia. So from Myra, where do they go? They pass by Cnidus, which is this next red arrow, and we realize that the winds were not in their favor. The winds were contrary. So they're traveling west. That means that the winds must have been blowing from the west. They were going against the winds. But yet the currents were such that they could still travel to the west, even though the winds were contrary. So what do they do after they pass by Cnidus? They go toward the south. And here is this area of Salmon. They pass by Salmon. And then we have this island of Crete. And it says, what do they do? They sailed under Crete, over against Salmon. So they go on the south side of Crete, and they port in this area called the Fair Havens, or a good harbor. So with fair weather, they travel from Caesarea to the island of Crete, this port of Fair Havens. Now, the trip from Caesarea to Rome with good weather, favorable winds, would take a period of 5 weeks. But whenever you have contrary winds, whenever you have poor weather, it's going to take much longer. And now as they come to Crete, they realize it's not going to be an easy journey. They're even coming to realize it's too late in the year to reach our destination of Rome. So now there's the question, if we're not able to make it to Rome before winter sets in and travel is no longer allowable, where are we going to winter over? What port are we going to use? Well, some say Fair Havens is the best place to stay. Others would say, well, Phoenix or Phenis is the best place to stay. So we continue reading in our passage, verses 9 through 12. Now, when much time was spent, And when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said unto them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phinehas, and there to winter, which is in the haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. During their sailing over smooth waters, the wind was contrary for much of the trip, and so that means they lost valuable time. No longer are they able to reach Rome without having to winter over someplace. Luke tells us that the fast had already passed, and this reference to the fast is the Day of Atonement. If the year is AD 59, which very probably it is, that would have been October 5th. This is the dangerous season for sailing. Whenever you reach November 11th and all the way into mid-March, that's time when everything shut down for sailing. Nobody would dare go onto the seas during that time period because it was very rough and a chance of storms that could capsize the ship. And so the question is, where are we going to winter over? They're currently at the port of Fair Havens. And Paul says, this is a good place for us to stay the winter. If we venture any further on, even if it's on the island of Crete, you're putting yourself in danger. The ship could be lost. The cargo could be lost. Even our lives could be lost. Paul was speaking very emphatically. Of course, he had traveled on sea many times previously, and he said, if you go and you leave, the ship is not only going to be lost, but our very lives are going to be laid on the line. We're going to lose our lives. Now, the centurion, the man in authority as far as the Roman army is concerned, at least on this ship, he talks with the pilot of the boat. He talks with the owner of the ship. And they think, well, it's better for us to sail further west to the port of Phinehas or Phoenix. And that's a much better harbor. It's more sheltered. Fair Havens wasn't nearly as sheltered. And so the ship would be more vulnerable to the storms that would blow in. Paul says we should stay at Fair Havens, but the centurion agreed with the pilot of the ship and the owner of the ship that they should travel further to the west and try to reach Phoenix if at all possible. So the majority sided with the owner and the pilot. They didn't agree with Paul's advice. And so they decide to move on. And we come to verse 13. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. So they're thinking everything's going to be okay. If the weather permits, they're going to make their destination probably even in a day's time. So they go, the winds are coming lightly from the south. But when you're on the open seas, anything can happen, right? And that's what's going to happen. It's going to change from smooth sailing to quite the terrible storm. We come to verses 14 through 17. But not long after there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euroclydon. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps in undergirding the ship. And fearing lest they should fall into the quicksands, strake sail, and so were driven. The days of smooth sailing have come to an end. They're now caught in the midst of a terrible, raging storm. And very likely, the storm is a northeaster, so the wind is blowing from the north and the east. And even though they're right along the coast of Crete, the island is not sufficient to shelter them from the wind. They were powerless before the raging storm and the winds. And so they're driven by the raging wind to the southwest. They come near a small island, not too far from Crete. It's called Cauda or Clauda. And it's here under this temporary shelter from the wind. Of course, it'd still be blowing hard, but a little bit of shelter given by this island. And whenever they get under this little bit of shelter, they take in the boat. This would have been the dinghy, kind of their escape boat. Normally it's towed behind them in good weather, but whenever rough weather comes, they want to bring it up on board, otherwise they're going to lose it. And so Luke tells us it's with a lot of effort that they took it up. And then they used helps, and they undergirded the ship. So that's probably ropes or cords or cables that were used around the hull, and however they did it, it was to strengthen the ship so that it wouldn't capsize, it wouldn't break, so that the hull could stay together. So they take action to try to preserve the ship as best they can. Their fear, though, is that they're going to be blown into this area of quicksand and of clay, a place where they'd easily get beached and capsized. It's known as the Syrtis. They're a long way off, but they didn't want to be blown to this area of the sea around North Africa. And so what do? In the King James, it says that they strike sail. That's probably referring to the lowering of the gear and perhaps the sails that they used in fair weather. They also got rid of some of the cargo. We don't know exactly what the cargo was or what they threw overboard, but they lightened the ship. They're trying to do their best to stay alive and to save the ship during this time of severe weather. So we continue on in the text, verses 18 and 19. So we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship, and the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. The storm was still raging strong. Very possibly the ship was taking on water. They were at the mercy of the waves and the sea. What were they to do? Well, the second day they lightened the ship. They throw some things overboard. The third day, they threw some of the tackle and the gear overboard. Now, can you imagine being with Paul and these other men as this storm is raging and they're being tossed back and forth and they're basically just being blown wherever the wind takes them? It'd be a scary situation, wouldn't it? A lot of unknowns. 3 days they've been tossed back and forth. They've been through a lot, but things aren't going to be getting better anytime soon. We come to verse 20. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. So the storm was so bad, the sailors, the soldiers, Paul, the prisoners, they couldn't see the sun or the moon or the stars for many days. Okay, so this isn't just a normal Iowa thunderstorm. This is what we could call a typhoon or a hurricane, something such as that. It's so bad that everybody had given up hope. From a human perspective, it was a hopeless situation. The ship was totally out of control. They were on the open seas. They had no way to tell where they were at. Who could tell how much longer the ship would stay together? So it was a terrible storm. The wind, the waves were raging. But even in the midst of the storm, God's grace is abundant. And we find a clear manifestation of God's favor in the following verses, in verses 21 through 26. Even in the raging storm, God's grace is manifest. So what do we read in verses 21 through 26? But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, "Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me, and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. But now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, 'Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me, howbeit we must be cast upon a certain island.'" So here is Paul and the prisoners and the sailors and the soldiers being tossed back and forth by this storm. And do you think under those circumstances, as you're trying to save the ship and trying to keep the water out, you're worried about, you know, what's going to happen the next day or if you're even going to be alive the next day? You're probably not even feeling all that well, probably a bit of seasickness or even maybe a lot of seasickness. Do you think you're going to sit down and have a good meal in those conditions? And the answer is no. And that's what we read in verse 21, after long abstinence, after they hadn't eaten food for a long time, Paul stands in the midst of these people, these men, and he has a message for them. And this is a message that was revealed to him by God's grace. What does he say? First of all, he says, "You should have listened to me. I told you back in Fair Havens that we shouldn't set out. If we did set out, the ship would be lost, the cargo would be lost, our own lives would be lost. It's just foolishness to travel at this time of year." But what did they do? They continued on. They didn't listen to Paul. Well, Paul didn't admonish them anymore. He gave them a hope, a message of hope, a message of comfort. Yes, things looked dark and hopeless, but they were not as dark as everyone assumed. Paul had a message of hope. He had an encouraging message. No one is going to lose their lives through this ordeal. Only the ship will be lost. Now, how could Paul say that? It wasn't because he was so knowledgeable in and of himself or he was able to see the future in and of himself. No, God had revealed this to him. An angel revealed this to him that night. And the angel told him, "Don't be afraid. You have to stand before Caesar in Rome. And not only would you stand before Caesar in Rome, not only would you survive, but all those in the ship will survive as well. God says, I've given those people to you." No doubt Paul had prayed for his fellow travelers. He had prayed that everyone would come through it safely, and God said, your prayer has been answered. Not only will your life be spared, but the lives of all with you will be spared as well. Isn't that an act of grace? God, it was so gracious to Paul and the rest of the people on that boat. And Paul was confident that God is going to do what he said he is going to do. This is God's declaration. It's true. It's sure. Yes, there would be a shipwreck to come, but the promise was all of you would be safe. All of you would stay alive. Well, how does this play out? We read in verses 27 through 29. But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Idria, about midnight the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, and sounded and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. Then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. So 2 weeks, can you imagine this? 2 weeks of being in this raging storm. 2 weeks of not even being able to see the sun and the moon. For 2 weeks, they're adrift in the open sea. And it's about midnight. The sailors thought that they heard land nearby. Now, how did they discern that? They heard with their ears, no doubt, that the breakers upon the coast. And so what do? They sounded to see how deep they were in the water. They threw a rope or a cable overboard, and it was weighted with lead. And they found, first of all, it was 20 fathoms. And a fathom is about 6 feet. They go a little bit further, maybe a half hour time span, and they found that's 15 fathoms. So they're nearing land. But what land is it? How quickly is it approaching? It was still dark. They couldn't see anything. So what do? They drop four anchors. They pray to God, or pray to their gods, probably not praying to the true and the living God. But these sailors are praying for day to come. Keeping in mind, these sailors are pagans, so they don't recognize the true God. Now we might think, well, the adventure is almost over. They're nearing land. But there's another twist that we read about in verses 30 through 32. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea, under color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. Now it's commonly believed that sailors will do what whenever their ship is in danger? Sailors will be the last ones to leave, right? Especially the captain. The captain is to die with the ship, right? That's commonly what is said, and we think, you know, any good captain is going to die with the ship. Any good sailor is going to die with the ship if the ship's going to be lost. Well, these sailors didn't have that mindset. These sailors thought, things are pretty bad, we're close to land, let's drop the dinghy down, let's get in it, we can escape. They're probably thinking, we'll be safe, we'll leave the rest of these guys in the ship, and whatever happens, happens. So that's the sailors' plans. They drop the dinghy into the sea. They are pretending as if they're going to put more anchors down. But somehow Paul learns of their plan, and he informs the centurion. He tells the soldiers, unless these sailors stay in the ship, we're all going to be lost. You can't be saved. So what do the soldiers do? They cut the ropes to the boat. The dinghy is dropped into the sea. It's gone. Now, I'm sure those sailors were not pleased. You think they were happy that their plan was found out and their way of escape was done away with? They weren't pleased, I'm sure. Now, they're all together. They're all in the boat. There's no way of escape, at least not by way of the dinghy. The sailors may have been disappointed. They may have been aggravated. They may have been angry. But yet, even the discovery of their plan and the foiling of their plan is God's grace. Why is it God's grace? Probably if they had escaped, they may have died in that little dinghy. If they had would have escaped, who knows what would have happened. But they didn't escape. God's promise was, you all will remain alive, but the condition was they all had to stay on that ship. That was God's grace. Maybe Paul was thinking, if all the sailors left, then how are they going to direct the big ship into the harbor or into a place where they can beach it? But now all of them are there. The experienced sailors are able to guide the ship toward land. Now they're still on storm-tossed seas, but there is hope. God's grace is being displayed in many different ways. We read in verses 33 through 38 now. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, this day is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health, for there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. And we were in all in the ship 260 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. Now earlier, Paul had encouraged them with a message of hope. He had received this revelation from an angel of the Lord. He told them, you're all going to be delivered from this storm. Only the ship would perish. But now he encourages all the men of the ship, some 276 of them, to eat. They hadn't eaten for 14 days. It's time for them to eat. They needed the strength in order to be safely going to shore. Paul says, not one of you will be hurt. Not one of the hairs of your head will be injured or will be falling from your head. So Paul said that. He took bread. He ate himself. And everybody else was encouraged. And they ate too. And then the rest of the cargo, the rest of the wheat, they threw overboard. See, that's God's grace, isn't it? God's grace in Paul's life, God's grace in the rest of the sailors' life, in the prisoners' lives, and the soldiers' lives. God was gracious to them. Looking back, whenever they started out in Caesarea, God's grace was abundant there, wasn't it? Because Paul had friends with him. Paul was able to go to Sidon with friends there. There was smooth sailing. They made progress. In the midst of the stormy sea, there was still God's grace, wasn't there? There was the God's grace of you know, the promise from God. They will all arrive safely. They were able to eat one last meal before they were shipwrecked. You know, these are all of God's grace, aren't they? Manifestations of God's grace. Well, the land that they are coming near is this island of Malta. You see that next red arrow to the very far west? Malta is the island that they are approaching. Very soon, they're going to be beaching the ship. As the day approaches, they see land. They see a place to ground the ship. So what do? They take up the anchors, or at least they cut them loose and they throw them overboard. They put up one of the sails. They loose the rudder band so they can steer the ship. They make their way to shore. But what happens in the process? They get stuck on either sand or clay. Maybe it's both. And part of the ship was beached. Part of it was moving with the waves. It was being beat with the waves. And what are they going to do now? They aren't close enough to get to land by just walking, obviously. So what's going to happen? Well, the soldiers now have a plan. We read in verses 42 through 44. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. So here's the ship stuck in the sand or in the clay. And the soldiers on the ship were concerned that if the prisoners were allowed to swim to shore, what would happen? They'd get away from them and some of them would escape. Now, for a Roman soldier to lose his prisoner, that could mean death for them. And so what was the plan of the soldiers? The plan was, well, let's kill all the prisoners now. Then we'll be safe and we won't have to worry about any prisoners escaping. But the centurion was not minded to do that. The centurion wanted to keep Paul alive. So he says, no, we're not going to do that. Whoever can swim to shore. Whoever can't swim can take a plank or a part of the ship and float to shore that way. Isn't that God's grace? That's God's grace in Paul's life, but that's God's grace in the rest of the prisoners' lives. God's grace. And who arrives safely on shore? Everybody, all 276, arrive safely on shore. See, God is a God who keeps his promises. He's a God who watches over his own. He's a God who watches over those who have not accepted him yet. You see, not everybody on that ship knew Jesus. Not everybody on that ship served the true and the living God, but God still was gracious to them. God is a God who is kind and compassionate, full of grace and mercy. It was true whenever Paul was going on smooth sailing, smooth waters. It was true whenever they were in the midst of that storm. It was true even in the shipwreck. Now we today, I doubt if too many of us are going to go out on a ship or on a boat later on this afternoon. I doubt if any of us in the near future or if ever will be in a place where we're in this raging storm for 14 days. I doubt if any of us will be shipwrecked in the near future, if ever. But God's grace is still going to be abundant in our lives. God is going to be good to us, and we aren't going to deserve it, but God is going to be good to us. He's going to be good to so many others too. God is a God who shows his grace no matter what the day holds. Whether it's smooth sailing, whether it's rough and stormy seas, whether it's in a shipwreck, God's grace is abundant. This morning we've gone through a chapter of the book of Acts. There's been a lot of terminology dealing with sailing and a lot of geographic places. But the thing to get from this entire chapter, one of the things we can get, is that God is a God of grace. He's good to us. He's good to all the world. We need to praise this God of grace. We need to live in light of his grace. Yes, it's by grace that we've been saved through faith, but it's also by his grace each and every day that we live. May we praise God today. He is the God of all grace.